We ain't partners. We ain't brothers and we ain't friends. I'm putting you down and keeping you down until Gans is locked up or dead. And if Gans gets away, you're going to be sorry you ever met me.
I'm already sorry.
Nick Nolte is a cop. Eddie Murphy is a con.
I can help you get Gans, but you got to get me out of here first.
You're crazy.
He pulls some strings.
See, you needed me a little more than you thought. I missed the cake.
He pulls some scams.
So where do you want to do it, honey? Want to hop up on the counter?
Nah, we can go in this room over here next to the bathroom.
Give me a break.
I'm dead serious.
Come on, we're on the move. Let's go.
They've got two killers to track down.
Toss me that piece, and he won't waste him.
They've got a kidnapping going down.
I want the money.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Let that Indian to snap her neck.
They've got a fortune to hunt down.
I want to know what's going on between you and Gans.
$500,000.
And it's all coming down in 48 hours.
But I gave you 48 hours to come up with something, and the clock's running.
This guy got a real itchy trigger finger, and he's a nervous cop. You better listen to him, you get your brain blown out.
I'm the calm type.
I'm looking for a good old boy by the name of Billy Bear.
Never heard of him.
Heard of him now, man?
You know, you are real stupid for a cop, man. You're following this guy too close.
Yeah, well, most cops are pretty stupid, but since you landed in jail, what the hell does that make you?
What's happening, Luther? I'm sorry about the door, man. Did that hurt? It looked real painful.
You come clean and we're going again right here, right now. So don't look surprised, cause you know what I
like. And tonight we ought to do it. Are you in some hurry or something?
Yes, I'm in a hurry. I haven't done anything for 3 years.
Oh, you used to be a priest or something.
This ain't my night.
If you screw up, I can promise you. Going down.
They couldn't like each other less. They couldn't need each other more.
You want to bet?
And if they can get off each other's case.
Look at you. You got a $500 suit on. You're still a lowlife.
Yeah, but I look good.
They just might solve this one.
Being a cop is a hard job, Jack.
Nick Nolte, Eddie Murphy.
We ain't brothers, we ain't partners, and we ain't friends. Now, if Dan gets away with my money, you're going to be sorry you ever met me.
I'm already sorry.
48 hours.
Y'all be cool.
Hello and welcome to the Film and Water Podcast, proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly. And for this episode, we're going to be talking about the 1982 comedy, buddy cop, drama, thriller, it's a bunch of things, 48 Hours, starring Nick Nolte, and in his film debut, Eddie Murphy. And joining me to talk about this interesting movie is my pal, former boss, and podcaster, not necessarily in that order, Erica Nicole Anderson. Hi, Erica.
Hi, Rob. It's great to talk to you, especially about Eddie Murphy.
Yes, it is great to be talking to you. You have been a podcaster for a little while now, and I've been very excited wanting to have you on one of my shows. So I'm excited here to be talking about 48 Hours. And as you say, more importantly, Eddie Murphy, because it was sort of kismet the way this all came together, because I had pitched you to come on the show and you said, I'll go think about some movies. I'm like, okay, great. Go think about some movies and come back to me. And then in the meantime, I had watched a bunch of episodes of the Jerry Seinfeld show, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. I had not seen that show. My fiance Kelly said she liked it a lot. So we binged watch a bunch of episodes, and I was kind of just going through the guest that interests me the most, you know, if I was like, oh, Patton Oswalt or whatever. Yeah. Okay, cool. And then I saw you did one with Eddie Murphy. And I was like, yes. Oh, wow, great. Okay. Eddie Murphy doesn't do a lot of interviews and pray, you know, from what I see, he doesn't do a lot of this stuff. So I was like, all right, this is great.
Yeah.
So I watched it and man, he had me in hysterics.
He's effortlessly funny. It's like he opens his mouth and it's funny.
Yes. I mean, literally holding my sides, laughing uncontrollably.
That was a great episode.
And it just, especially when he starts doing this bit about Michael Jackson and he's imitating Michael Jackson, talking about the chimp bubbles. And I mean, just, I lost it. And it's the thing that, the reason it sort of like struck a lightning bolt in my mind is I think for the most part, it feels like Eddie Murphy at some point just decided to kind of like turn that off.
Yeah.
In his career, he just was like, I'm going to do kids movies. I'm going to be the voice of the donkey in Shrek, in the 19 Shrek movies.
Yeah.
And you know, when you grow up with someone like I did, or with Eddie Murphy, I was around 10 years old when he really made his debut on Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always thought of him as, oh, okay, maybe as he's gotten older, you know, he's lost it a little, you know what I mean? And now he's kind of doing daddy daycare and, you know, stuff like that, and whatever, that's fine. I mean, that pays the rent. And by the way, in that episode, you see his house. Holy geez.
Yes.
that's not a house. That's a compound he's got going on.
He didn't make a lot of money. What happened to that guy?
Yeah. Whoa. but then I saw him last year in the Netflix original movie, Dolomite Is My Name.
Which was brilliant.
He is great in.
Yeah.
And I saw him in this and I went, no. He just doesn't want to be the Eddie Murphy that he was of 1982. That's his choice, of course. But I was fascinated with the idea that this is a guy that still has all of his skills, all of his wit. He's just as sharp as he was 30 years ago, and he just chooses to kind of keep that in his holster.
Yes.
I thought that was interesting. So I had that in the back of my mind, and then you came back to me and said, I want to talk about 48 Hours. I thought, oh, perfect. It's where it all started with Eddie Murphy. So,
and I have to tell you why I thought of that movie. It was his birthday weekend.
Mm.
And I decided, oh, I'm going to watch. It's his 60th birthday.
Wow.
Well, I'm like, I'm going to watch Eddie Murphy movies. And that was his first movie.
Yep.
And it was also the first movie I saw on my first date.
Whoa.
Yeah. Okay. So it was a double feature. It was 48 Hours and Trading Places.
Oh, and wow.
Yeah, wow. It was summer before my 13th birthday. And the guy that I went with, or actually a couple of weeks before my 13th birthday. And the guy that I went with said, you can bring a couple of friends, a girlfriend or something if you want. And he brought five guys and it was just me. And so I went, okay, this is interesting. And we sat next to each other, but then I was kind of like, you know, I'm really more into Eddie Murphy than I am you. So I'm here with him.
Did you have any trouble getting into two R-rated movies? At 13 years old?
It was downtown Chicago, and the six of us just walked in. It was during the day.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a double feature, and it didn't cost as much because both movies, I think, had been in the theaters for a while.
Right.
And so, yeah, we just kind of walked in during the day, saw the movie. When it was over, I went, yeah, I'm going home because you brought five dudes on our date.
What a weird move that is. Like, I don't know. May I ask how old this gentleman was?
He was also 13.
So he brought five other 13-year-old guys?
Yeah.
That's a – all right. That's
really weird.
A weird move. Weird move, buddy. Yeah. Okay. All right. Wow. So before we even talk about 48 Hours, I do want to give a little bit of context to where Eddie Murphy was in 1982. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I grew up on Saturday Night Live. My parents let me watch the original show.
Yes,
you know,
same.
Yeah. And even though I was way too young to really probably see a lot of that stuff and I didn't get a lot of the jokes, nevertheless, they let me watch it. So I grew up with... Yeah, I mean, grew up with Belushi, Aykroyd, Bill Murray, Chevy Chase. I mean, and you know, that five-year group, that initial 5 years of the show was, of course, legendary at this point. Mm-hmm. And it spawned these iconic performers.
Yeah.
That said, as good as all those people were, and I love Bill Murray, nobody was as good on Saturday Night Live as Eddie Murphy was.
No one. Hands down. Yeah.
For people who don't know the history of that show, after the original group left and Lorne Michaels left, the entire group left, the writers, everybody, the show was just basically a shell that they repopulated with a new producer and a new cast. And initially, Eddie Murphy was not part of the cast. He managed to badger himself onto the show. He kept making appeals to the talent coordinator, a guy named Neil Levy, and he just wouldn't give up, which is really going to pay dividends. You can see there's going to be a lot of that in Eddie Murphy's career. He's just got this amazing confidence. He was only 18 at the time.
Yeah.
Imagine 18
at the time. And a featured player on probably the most iconic late night show ever.
Unreal. And so he gets on the show, and he is just a featured player. And basically his first appearance is on a sketch sitting on a bench. He doesn't even have a line. And he basically, for the first half of the season, just never got anything to do. And it was at the point where Saturday Night Live was really in the pits because the writing was terrible and everyone hated the new show. And finally, there was a moment where he kept badgering the writer, saying, give me something to do. And finally, the producer, Gene Demanian, said, okay, think of something for Weekend Update. Yes. And he did this bit for Weekend Update, and it was involving something about a law that had been passed saying that basketball teams in high school had to have at least like one white player. Like it was like a reverse.
Yeah.
And he did this bit and he got the biggest laugh of anybody had done on Saturday Night Live that season. It was just an explosion. And they realized, oh, wait a minute, this kid's got something. And they kept giving him more and more to do. And he kept getting more and more laughs. And then boom, everyone realized this is the guy.
Yeah.
This is the guy. There's a sketch that he did where he was doing, he's sitting in a chair and he's doing like a Black History Month thing. And he's talking about George Washington Carver.
Yes.
And there's a moment where he messes up the line. He screws up. And the mic in the studio audience must have been placed in just such a way that you could hear someone in the audience mock him for missing the line. Yeah. Where he said he's supposed to say soil, but he said soul. And you hear this woman say soil, kind of laughing. And Eddie Murphy ad-libs and he goes, so I messed up. Shut up.
Yeah.
And you're like, the balls on this kid. I mean, like, wow. To have the presence of mind to kind of like own that moment like that.
Yeah. Character.
Yeah. I mean, just unreal. And he just continued on to be the biggest star SNL had produced. I mean, just this huge thing. And of course, you know, Hollywood then comes a calling at that point. Now, so this is where 48 Hours comes into play, because originally 48 Hours had started out as a Clint Eastwood vehicle. They originally thought it was going to be, Clint Eastwood was going to be the cop, as you could, of course, well imagine. Yeah. And he was going to be partnered with Richard Pryor. That was the original idea, was Clint Eastwood and Richard Pryor. Okay. And you can see that. You can totally see that combination. And then Clint Eastwood dropped out. Richard Pryor dropped out. And then they said, okay, let's get Gregory Hines. Gregory Hines will be the convict. And Gregory Hines was gearing up to do a Francis Ford Coppola movie, The Cotton Club. And he couldn't commit to it. At that point, Nick Nolte enters the picture, literally and figuratively. And they're like, we've got Nick Nolte. And so now they're like, well, now we need – who's going to play the convict? And that's when Eddie Murphy, just as he's bubbling up on Saturday Night Live, comes in and they give him the part. And by the way, Eddie Murphy had made a promise to himself that he would be a millionaire by the time he was 22.
Ah.
He had made himself that promise. And eventually, after 48 Hours had become a hit, Paramount cut him a check for $15 million.
Yeah.
Which he kept a copy of on the wall of his office at Saturday Night Live. So, again, balls on this guy. So anyway, we've got this pair here. The film is being directed by Walter Hill, who came to this movie having directed The Warriors, or the Charles Bronson movie Hard Times, a really good movie called Southern Comfort. He would later go on to do a movie with Richard Pryor called Brewster's Millions. I think he was probably sorry ended up doing that. But anyway, so they pair these two guys together, Nick Nolte, the experienced cop, with, you know, loudmouth new guy, Eddie Murphy. And there are very few movies, I could say, that feature a more startling debut performance from anybody than this movie. Because Eddie Murphy, as good as Nick Nolte is in this movie and as good as the other actors are, and we'll talk about them, Eddie Murphy owns this movie.
He really does. He really does. His first scene doesn't come, 15 minutes in, 20 minutes into the movie, and he blows it away. And you can't take your eyes off him the entire movie, the rest of the movie.
Yeah, the opening of the movie is like a fairly standard, I don't mean standard in a bad way, but a, you know, a cop thriller in what you've seen. Yeah. Nick Nolte is Jack Gates. He's one of these cops who's kind of always going over the line, you know, as cops like him tend to do.
Yeah.
He gets involved. He shows up. He meets some buddies at a what they think is going to be a routine kind of roust at this hotel. What they don't realize is in the hotel is this escaped convict played by the always kind of slimy James Remar playing a guy named Gans. And we see him escape at the beginning of the movie. There's he's on a chain gang, mm-hmm. and his partner played by a guy named Billy Bear, played by Sonny Landham, helps him escape for the really clever ruse where Billy Bear shows up pretending that his truck is running out of coolant and he needs to borrow some water. And then Gans sort of insults him, saying, you know, calling him, you know, like making Indian jokes, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that leads to this fight and it gets out of control. And then they both pull guns and you realize, this was planned from the very beginning. They shoot the chain gang cops and escape. Yeah. And it's a pretty brutal sequence, you know. It's pretty heavy with the gunshot. I mean, the sound effects of this movie, like all the gunshots, sound like lightning going off. They're like super super heavy.
Yeah.
So anyway, these cops roust who they think again is going to be sort of a standard bus at this hotel, and then Gans, who as we see has got an itchy trigger finger, he ends up shooting both of the cops. Nick Nolte's cop Jack Gates calls for help. He ends up having to toss away his gun to Gans to save the life of one of his fellow cops, a guy named Algren, played by Jonathan Banks, the legendary character actor who you saw in Beverly Hills Cop and more famous as playing Mike Armentrout in Breaking Bad.
Yes.
And he gets shot. So Gans and Billy Bear end up killing these two cops and leaving sort of Nick Nolte's character holding the bag, because of course everyone thinks he's sort of responsible because he's a loose cannon that he might have gotten these two cops shot. Now that means he has to take it upon himself to get this guy because his whole career is online. Therein lies the setup as to why he has to get an old associate of Gans is out of jail. And that of course is Reggie Hammond, played by Eddie Murphy.
Yes. I almost called him Billy Ray Valentine, but that's a different movie.
another amazing instance of Eddie Murphy's confidence was the character, when he got the script, was originally named Willie Biggs. And apparently when he got the script, he thought that was way too sort of typical, you know, kind of like black guy name that he thought, oh, this is what white guys would call a black guy. So he asked that the name be changed to Reggie Hammond. And again, this is his first movie. You know, you could see a lot of people kind of being like, oh, I don't want to make waves. But he was like, no, we can make this better. And it's like,
yeah, that is realistic. I actually have a cousin named Reggie Hammond.
Do you really?
Yes.
Do you always talk about how there's a new sheriff in town? His name is Reggie Hammond?
Yes. Yes.
Of course. So Gates has to go to prison to bust this guy and to get him out. And that's where, as you talked about, Erica, it's the introduction of Eddie Murphy on screen. And it's great the way Walter Hill sort of leads into it, because we see Jack Gates go into the jail, and they do all the things with the sliding of the doors. And then he's walking down, because the guy says, oh, he's like cell 7.
Yeah.
And he starts to walk. And as he's walking, we hear
him before we see him.
This high-pitched guy screeching Roxanne, which, again, like not a song you would sort of think Eddie Murphy's character would be into, which I kind of like that. I like that he's
singing. Yeah.
And of course, he's sitting there with his headphones on and his sunglasses, and he's just belting this song out.
Two feet, like a lazy boy.
Yeah, yeah, like right on a lazy boy. 2 feet away from his cellmate, who was clearly deeply annoyed, but Reggie Hammond could not care less.
Exactly. And he's singing the leads and the background,
Put on a red light. Put on a red light. He's terrible. He's just so bad. And so Gates, you know, offers him a deal, and he basically says, "You're going to help me." He doesn't offer him a deal at the very beginning. He basically says, you're my property for the next 48 hours. Again, hence the title. And we see immediately that, you know, Reggie Hammond's not too intimidated by Nick Nolte, even though Nick Nolte as playing Jack, he's pretty intimidating because he's a huge guy. Nick Nolte, just a big dude. Walter Hill keeps sort of focusing about how much taller he is than Eddie Murphy. But Reggie Hammond just really not that intimidating. It's just an amazing, like, again, the confidence that Eddie Murphy shows on screen, and it's amazing to think that he apparently was pretty unsure about his acting.
Yes.
But it doesn't show.
Not at all. Not at all. He's, as you said, confident, but it also looks like he had been doing it, you know, because he kind of goes between playing straight and being funny.
Mm-hmm.
And he does so with such effort. And you forget that was his first movie and he was a kid.
He was a kid. Yeah. He was like 21 years old. I mean, it's just unreal. Again, how much he, and it's, you know, it's those things. It's like, you've seen actors in movies where they just don't like fill the screen,
mm-hmm.
and you can't put your finger on it, what it is that's wrong.
Yeah.
But you're just like, they're not a movie star.
Yeah.
But man, Eddie Murphy just comes like fully formed.
Yeah.
As a movie star. And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, part of that has to be that the nerve he had on television, being able to kind of look the camera in the eye and stare it down and not look intimidated.
Right.
And that of course, as the viewer, that's makes you relax because you feel like you're in good hands. Like, this guy knows he's going to be funny.
Exactly.
He knows he's going to be interesting.
Yeah. We're going to love this character.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. And so when he gets busted out of jail by Cates, he of course is wearing the suit that he went in with, which is like a $450 suit. And one of the things you talked about when we were preparing this is you said, this isn't just Eddie Murphy. This is Eddie Murphy in a suit. So why don't you talk about what 13-year-old Erica felt when she saw Eddie Murphy in his sharp suit?
Well, I thought, even as a 13-year-old, I thought a man in a double-breasted suit was automatically infinitely more handsome than a man in a single-breasted suit. That was just it. Now, the shoes I didn't really like. He wore the white shoes. They were the off-white shoes. That wasn't so much. But the suit, and then he talked about how, you know, the suit was classy and how it gave him, you know, this certain look and a certain, you know, it took him to a different level of hustler, you know, because he's a hustler. But it takes him to a whole different level. So at 13, I'm looking at him going, wow, he's gorgeous. And, yeah, after I'm done with Michael Jackson, I'm glad this guy is next on my list.
That's eminently reasonable.
The suit becomes another character.
He looks. Yeah. He keeps talking about how good he looks in it, and he does look good. It's one of those things where it's like he's arrogant as all hell, but it's like, is it arrogance if it's accurate?
Exactly.
You know? I mean, that's more confidence than it is arrogance, exactly. And so the next great scene that Eddie Murphy has in this movie is when they go and they find another associate of theirs, a guy named Luther, played by David Patrick Kelly. And David Patrick Kelly is a guy you've seen in a million movies. He was in Walter Hill's The Warriors, who I mentioned. He was in Dreamscape. He's in the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie Commando. He's the guy that Schwarzenegger drops off the cliff.
Yeah.
You remember when you said that I wouldn't kill you? I wouldn't kill you? That's right, Majors, you did. I lied. That's David Patrick Kelly.
That's a good Schwarzenegger.
Thank you. And so so Cates chases him out of his hotel room. He gets shot at, and he's not paying attention to where he's going. He runs by the car that Reggie is sitting in. And, of course, Reggie opens the door at the exact right moment, causing Luther to do a, you know, go ass over tea kettle.
Yeah.
onto the ground. And man, Eddie Murphy is just gangbusters funny with this whole thing where he's like, man, Luke, did that hurt? That looked real painful when you ran into it like that. He's just doing it. and poor Luther, of course, has just been, you know, got the wind knocked out of him. And he's like, Luther, Luther. And he's like, trying to get his attention. The poor guy looks like he's had his chest crushed
by
hitting this door.
And again, it's kind of that playful kind of con man, hustler kind of guy, street guy. But, you know, he's a good guy. And he had to be that guy because he was afraid.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it looked like to me, you know? Yeah.
And he picks up Luther's gun that Luther drops. And of course, Cates is like, drop that gun. He pulls his gun and he's like, drop that gun. And there's this little bit of a standoff where he's like, don't put your gun at me, Cates. And Cates is not kidding around. So finally, Reggie has to turn the gun over. And I love that when he, you know, he has his finger in the trigger and then he kind of drops it and lets it fall. So the barrel is no longer pointed again. And then Reggie, Eddie Murphy, lets loose this like 1,000-watt smile.
Yeah.
When he does it, where he's just like, okay, we're kind of ramping things down a little bit. And he just becomes kind of, like you said, like the hustler.
Yeah.
Reggie Hammer. He's just like, okay. And then, of course, Cates is pounding the crap out of this guy, out of Luther. And he's like, you better tell this boy something. He's having a real good time with this car door. And it's like Eddie Murphy is doing his own like Mystery Science Theater commentary.
Yes.
On this cop thriller that we're watching. Like, he's right. Just kind of off to the side making funny comments as we're watching Nick Nolte go through the paces of this movie.
Yeah, I wonder how much of that was ad-lib.
You have to think Eddie Murphy was bringing a certain amount of this because it's so much in his language. Like, it doesn't sound written for Eddie Murphy. It sounds like it doesn't sound pre-written. It sounds like it's coming out of Eddie Murphy's brain.
Yeah.
By the way, we should mention this film was written by a couple of guys, Roger Spottiswood, who was actually more famous as a director. This is his only credit as a writer. He directed some movies like Turner and Hooch with Tom Hanks.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. The James Bond movie, Tomorrow Never Dies, and the classic Stop or My Mom Will Shoot, starring Sylvester Stallone. Yeah. He was also written by a guy named Larry Gross, who wrote another film for Walter Hill called Geronimo, and Stephen E. D'Souza, who basically was a factory of action movie scripts in the 80s. He wrote The Running Man for Arnold Schwarzenegger, Commando for Arnold Schwarzenegger, and a little film called Die Hard. Yeah. I mean, Stephen D'Souza was just – he was your guy if you needed kind of light action comedy in the 80s. I mean, yeah, what a filmography. Just to have Die Hard, let alone 48 Hours. So they go back on the road and they want to try and find Gans's girlfriend, they're trying to track down. And that leads to what is, I'm interested if you agree with this, the best scene in the movie, which is where they go to Torchy's, the redneck bar.
Yes. Yes, it is. I quote that scene all the time.
Yeah. So they have this debate about, Eddie Murphy and Reggie Hammond says, you know, the only reason cops like you don't get your ass handed to you when you rough up the brothers is because you have a badge.
Yeah.
That's the only reason you're getting away with it. And Cates is like saying, no, it's attitude and experience that gets you through. It's not the badge. And they decide to have this sort of friendly bet about, okay, Cates gives him his badge and he says, fine. You go in there and you pretend you're a cop and see what you get.
Yeah. And
if anyone listening has not seen this scene, I mean, this is really one of, I don't know. It's like, to me, it's one of the great scenes in movies.
It is. I was just going to say, if you haven't seen this scene, even if you haven't seen the movie, you've seen bits and pieces of this scene.
Yeah.
Like, it's iconic. Yeah.
Watching Reggie come in and just take total control of this shit kicker bar.
Yeah.
Is unreal. I mean, he talks to the, I mean, he actually comes in first and he's trying to be nice. We the set deck is pretty ominous. There's a bunch of, Southern Pride flags on the walls and all that kind of nonsense. And all these guys going, yeehaw, and stuff like that. And he orders a drink. He orders a drink from the bartender played by Peter Jason, who's a character actor you've seen in 1,000 John Carpenter movies. And he orders a vodka, and of course the bartender can't resist, and he says, why don't you have a Black Russian?
Yeah.
And Reggie Hammond is like, that fake bullshit laugh that he's got.
Yeah.
And he does the whole Black Russian, I get it, it's because I'm black. That's very funny. No, I'll just have a vodka, thank you. And you know Reggie's going to pop off.
Yeah.
And you're just waiting for it to happen.
That was the introduction to, I'm going to have to get crazy.
Yeah. Oh, man. So he grabs he gets the shot glass, throws it into the bar and smashes it. Of course, that stops the music. And he then decides to pretend to be a cop and starts questioning people. And the one guy even drops the N-word to Reggie Hammond. And then Reggie just owns these guys.
Yeah.
Just owns them.
It was a match of wits.
Yeah. Oh, man. And it is so fun to watch him own these guys, just insult them. He one point he pulls a wad of cash out of one of the guy's shirts, and he's like, "Where'd you get this?"
Yeah,
and he says something like "tax refund," and he's like, "Bullshit! You're too stupid to have a job." I mean, and it's just it. I can only imagine when they wrote this, how much of it again, like you were saying, Erica, like how much of it was Eddie Murphy, yeah. How much of it was the script, because it's just Eddie Murphy is just owning this scene, and I have to wonder if Nick Nolte, when he was watching this, was like, "Oh man, this guy's got it."
Yeah, you think about a veteran with a first timer and how well that scene was executed. And yeah, I agree. He had to kind of sit back and go, "Wow, okay, this kid is good."
Yeah, I mean, and it's got a real tension to it because you know that he's in a lot of danger. He's in a bar full of guys that would rip him apart, but he's got such confidence. And again, he has the line to be like, "You people are rednecks. I hate rednecks."
Yeah. So
that means I'm enjoying this shit. You know, yeah. It is just amazing. And again, what a skinny little kid this Eddie Murphy was. And yet he dominates this scene. And I tried to do some research on this movie about the making of it. I wasn't able to dig up a whole lot of stuff, but like, I remember hearing about when they were making The Godfather and they were really unsure about Francis Coppola and the way he was handling this movie. The studio was ready to fire him. They were like, "I think this is a disaster." And then they saw the scene of Al Pacino killing the cop and Sollozzo in the Italian restaurant. And apparently the studio got that footage and they went, "Okay, he knows what he's doing. That's how." And I wonder if that's what happened here. Because they were worried about Eddie Murphy. The studio was worried that this guy wasn't really quite ready. And I have to wonder, when they got these scenes back, did they just say, "Okay, we're good"?
Yeah, I understand why they were worried. He was a guy from SNL.
Yep.
You know, he was supposed to be funny. There wasn't a whole lot of time for us to see Belushi get super serious. And the time he was serious, it flopped. So, you know, they didn't really have anything to go on. And now we have, you know, Eddie Murphy and we have Kristen Wiig and we have, you know, all these people who show us they can be both funny and serious. And in this movie, Eddie Murphy had the daunting task of going from SNL to, you know, a comic relief kind of character in an action movie.
Mm-hmm.
Thriller. And so I can understand why the studio was like, "I don't know about this kid. He's new. This is his first movie and he's funny."
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just owns it. And he's pretty good at the action stuff. Cause afterwards they find the, Gans's girlfriend and her roommate. And by the way, one of the women we see is Denise Crosby from Star Trek, The Next Generation, Tasha Yar, in an early role. And I love the bit where they're spying on the girls and they're watching Devils, and one of them has like an aerobics show on, and it's a girl in like a skimpy leotard doing like leg splits, and he's like, "TV has changed since I've been in prison."
In 3 whole years, it's this.
Yeah, what is TV? What has TV become? Oh my goodness! And also, Reggie even offers his sexual services to the girls, where he texts, "Maybe you girls like to go around the track with us." And again, he flashes that $1 million smile. It's just, And that leads to a point where they, of course, throughout this whole movie, Cates has been insulting Reggie, calling him a boy, and at one point even calls him watermelon, for God's sakes. And you know, in that kind of stuff, it's like you wonder, is Cates doing it just to get Reggie's goat, or is Cates really that bad? I guess, maybe it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But it's uncomfortable because it's like, you know, hey, man, what are you, you know? And it leads to the point where they actually get into a fist fight.
Yeah.
And now, it's not plausible that Reggie Hammond could hold his own with the giant hulking Nick Nolte, and Nick Nolte does beat, you know, Eddie Murphy up quite a bit. Nevertheless, Eddie Murphy throws some actual plausible punches. Like, he looks like he knows how to handle himself.
Get some good jabs in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I was watching, I watched again yesterday just to refresh, even though I just watched it in April. And you know, I was thinking, this, like Raw and Delirious, has not aged well. Like, you can't just in a movie say some of the things that Nick Nolte's character said. But it kind of then shows you how far and how not so far we had come as a country in 1982. And so, yeah, it was one of those things where I was like, oh, you can't say that. Or, you know, there's some scenes that are very misogynistic, but that's where we were.
Yeah, well, I'm, you know what? I'm glad you said that, because the one cast member I haven't really mentioned to this point is the luminous Annette O'Toole. And yes. Playing Kate's girlfriend, Elaine. We see her in the very beginning, and then there's a couple scenes with her on the phone. And as anyone who listens to one of my other podcasts, Superman 3 Movie Minute, knows, I am in complete love with Annette O'Toole. I always have been. I just find she is just gorgeous and sweet and beautiful, and I just love her. And she's wasted in this movie. she really is just there to give Kate's a bunch of crap about being kind of a bad boyfriend.
Yeah. And
this is a movie made by guys, mostly for guys, that kind of attitude. So it is kind of a shame that an actress of her talent is sort of squandered in this role, because she's not given a whole lot to do, unfortunately, because she's very talented.
Yeah. Except kind of fuss at Kate.
Yeah.
You know, what are you doing? How dare you work?
Yeah. I mean, like they write it in a way that she's kind of out of line, because at one point, he's like, look, I'm not coming home tonight. And she's like, F you, Jack. And you're like, if he would just explain,
exactly,
hey, while I went out today, a cop got killed. I kind of need to address this.
Yeah.
You know, but they're writing her as kind of like the bitchy girlfriend, which is, again, that's a waste of Annette O'Toole's talents. Yeah. But nevertheless, I'm still happy to see her. She did Superman 3 right after this movie, actually. So she had a good couple of years in the early 80s. By the way, there's one other actress I do want to mention that in the opening scene in the hotel, the desk clerk, who they kind of rough up a little when she doesn't want to give them the information. She's an actress named Tara King.
Okay.
And the character she plays in this movie is called Frizzy. That's her credited character. And I'm guessing she was named that because her hair is massive frizzy thing. She plays the same character in Walter Hill's previous movie, The Driver.
Wow. She
plays the hotel clerk Frizzy. Wow. Which means, of course, The Driver and 48 Hours exist in the same cinematic universe.
Yes.
So Walter Hill was setting up his CU long before Marvel, those hacks. He was already, so there you go. I was pleasantly surprised to find Frizzy is the connecting link between two Walter Hill movies. So
I have to go back and check Frizzy out in The Driver.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And of course, they made a sequel to 48 Hours, another 48 Hours. So there are three movies
that are
linked together. And Eddie Murphy, we know Eddie Murphy has already linked together some of his other movies.
Yes.
He linked together Coming to America and Trading Places.
Yes.
So, you know, maybe some enterprising writer wants to just put all the Eddie Murphy movies together in one big cinematic universe. I don't know.
Well, let's do most of them. Let's leave, like, Pluto Nash.
You want to leave that one out? All right, that's fair enough. I do want to talk a little bit about Eddie Murphy's movies after this, because I do find it interesting, his sort of some of the career choices that he made. So anyway, the movie continues on, and they have these run-ins with James Remar, again, playing Gans and Billy Bear, and there's a shootout in a subway, and this part of the tricky thing of doing like a comedy thriller is where there's a long stretches of this movie where there's no laughs.
Yes.
Just a thriller. Now, when you watched it again, did you like that stuff, or did you kind of want to get back to Eddie Murphy being funny?
Well, of course I wanted to get back to Eddie Murphy, but I also watching as an adult, as a 13-year-old, I was very impatient. I don't put Eddie on the screen. But watching it as an adult, I feel like we needed those moments to kind of tie it all together. And so I didn't mind it so much, but it did start to, I did get bored.
Right. Right. I mean, as good as this movie is, and it's, again, I think it's a well-executed movie. It's, as a cop thriller, it's like a lot of other cop movies that you've seen. The thing that makes it unique is Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
So when you're not with Eddie Murphy, and there's a long stretch where he's kind of all, because he basically gets away from Jack.
Yeah.
When there's the subway shootout, he gets away and he goes to this bar. He goes to, as he calls it, a brother's bar.
Yeah.
And he goes and he hits up a woman Again, the confidence he has.
They're like, I'm with someone.
Yeah. Were you frustrated by that when he's hitting on those women and they're all turning him down? Because you're sitting there going, I take you home, Eddie. Come on.
I'm 13 and don't know what you want to do, but I'll be down for it.
And you know, he picks up this girl and he basically, after dancing with her just very briefly, he straight up says, hey, look, it's 10:05. By 10:10, I want to be having sex.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's, you know, I, as an adult to adult woman, I relate it. You can be more creative.
Yeah. She's like, that's how you ask me? Yeah. And then he even talks about, I don't have any money. Can you pay for the room? And she's like, you don't even have any money.
So let's get this straight. You're crass and you're broke. Okay.
I have never been that confident in my life about anything. I've never had 10% of that confidence. Ever. Just never had it. So again, that's what makes him Eddie Murphy.
I don't know that it would work.
I don't think it would. So he's about to actually go off with this woman, thanks to Kate's giving him some money. Yeah. By the way, there's a great detail where he asks Kate for the money and Kate's pulls money out of his pocket and it's all crumpled up like lettuce leaves.
Yeah.
He has no idea what he's got. He's like, I think I got a 20 here. No clue.
Do you not have a wallet?
Yeah. And then I love when he goes and he finds the woman and there's a guy flirting with her.
Yeah.
And he pretends to be her husband. Like, that's my wife. What are you doing?
Rent money for one night.
And he kind of like flexes his shoulders a little bit. Like he's trying to make himself bigger. Like he's a peacock and he's strutting.
And the guy is huge.
He's a big dude. He's a big dude. Yeah. Again, it's just Reggie Hammond just is so full of confidence. But then just as he's about to get with the woman, he sees Luther leaving his hotel earlier than they thought. So he has to basically push the girl off after the girl goes along with it.
Right.
He has to push her off and then he goes and he gets Kate's. And that leads to a shootout on this bus where Luther is killed. And yeah. It's interesting in that the whole reason Luther is going through all this is to retrieve his girlfriend because they're holding his girlfriend hostage. Yeah. And then Luther gets killed and we never see the girlfriend again. We don't see whether she gets killed or whatever. They just drop her from the movie entirely. They just forget about it. Because again, this is a movie made by dudes and they're just like, nah, we don't, it doesn't matter. The woman's out of the movie. It doesn't make it.
Right, right. We don't care.
Yeah. It's
suddenly as she appeared, she disappeared.
Yeah. This is all guys shooting each other. That's why we're doing it. So, then they realize, they think, okay, well, that's it. It's over. We blew it. Gans has gotten away. He's killed Luther. He's got the money. He's got the money that him and Reggie put together from, I guess you remember, I can't remember how they got the money. Is it a drug deal? Did they ever talk about where the money comes from?
Never really talked about the money. He just said it's the type of money that you don't find or you don't, nobody looks for or something to that effect.
And nobody says it's missing or something.
Exactly.
Like that.
Exactly. So, yeah. But he never say exactly how he got this $500,000.
Okay. All right. It's probably just some general thievery and stuff like that. Probably.
Yeah.
So they realize, okay, this is probably it. There's a nice scene with Nick Nolte and his cop pal, played Kehoe, played by Brian James. Brian James passed away in 1999. He was in a couple of Walter Hill movies. He was in Southern Comfort. He was in another 48 Hours, and he's in Blade Runner. He's in Blade Runner. So I mean, you know, good career for him. They have a nice rapport, him and Kehoe, because there's a bit where he's like, Kehoe has actually gotten a phone call with like a piece of evidence that would help Cates.
Yes.
And he's like, it's on my desk somewhere. And Cates is like, where is it? He's like, I'm not your secretary. Find it yourself.
And he goes, okay, fine. It's under the light.
Yeah. It's under the lamp. Like he takes pity, takes pity on poor Cates. And then that leads to, they find another piece of evidence. They track Gans down and they chase him through what is presumably the sort of Chinatown part of San Francisco.
Yeah.
Which leads to this eerie shootout. And by the way, I should mention the music, the score is by James Horner, the legendary James Horner, who, of course, has done a million great movies, Titanic and things like that. A lot of stuff for James Cameron. And it leads to this this tense standoff where Reggie has got a gun pointed to his head by Gans. Nick Nolte comes out of the mist like this sort of avenging angel kind of thing. And Reggie says, go ahead and shoot him, man. And that's exactly what Cates does, nearly taking Reggie's head off in the process. Yeah. And I love that Reggie's like, what are you, kid? What are you, a psycho, man? I was joking.
And he goes, I called your bluff.
Yeah. And it's, I like that it's the one, because the ending mirrors the beginning in that it's very dark and yes. It's very grim. But I like that there's at least, you've got some of that, again, that Eddie Murphy energy in there. Because, again, he talks tough, but he really is not like a violent guy. And so all these bullets flying by his head makes him very uncomfortable.
Yes. Yeah. Again, he looks like, you know, the kid who had to pretend he was tough in order to survive the neighborhood. That's what he looks like. Yeah.
So then we see that he ends up with the girl. He ends up the woman, I should say. and he even says, I'm going to be away. I'm going to be away for 6 months. I'll come back and find you after that. You know, again, that's a hell of a promise to make. That's very confident.
He offers her money and she goes, I told you I wasn't a professional.
Yeah.
What? No, buy yourself something nice.
Buy yourself something. And then the movie wraps up with the two of them getting into Reggie's car, which is a nice little convertible. I love how small Reggie's car is because Nick Nolte looks like he could barely fit it. Like he's exactly. This monster kind of lumbering into this car. And he basically says, okay, you know, there you have like a little time left before we get back to prison. And he lets Reggie, him and Reggie drive off together. And we hear the prize of the boys are back in town song. And that's the end of the movie. And, you know, I've watched this movie. I didn't see it in the theater. I was, unlike you, Erica, I was not allowed to see R-rated movies at 13 years old.
Yeah. I went with it because it was Eddie Murphy.
Right. Okay. There you go.
To be honest, I tricked my mom into buying me his first comedy album.
Oh.
For my, I think it was my 12th or 13th birthday. And it was because she allowed me to stay up to watch him. On right. Saturday Night Live. And then she heard it and she went, oh no.
it's a hard R. That stuff is hard, delirious and raw. That's some hard R stuff. But I've been watching this. I'm sure I saw this on cable for the first time when I was, you know, a little older and my parents weren't paying attention to what I was watching and stuff on cable. But I've always loved this movie. It holds up really well. It's just, it works as a thriller, but it works because it is still very, very funny.
Yes.
And it is just Eddie Murphy just bursting onto the screen. And you mentioned Trading Places. Like, he's fantastic in Trading Places. Yes. And then right after this, he would do Beverly Hills Cop. Now, what is your opinion on Beverly Hills Cop as a movie?
The first one was fun. It was different and well, not extremely different. Of course, again, it's Eddie Murphy and he's the reason why you watch the movie.
Yes.
I felt like, you know, the fish out of water kind of concept was done very well by him and you got to meet some fun characters. My sister and I, if we don't understand what someone is saying to us, we always say, what is pertaining? And so, you know, we kind of got some, you know, lighthearted, what do you call it? Lexicon. So there's some pop culture lexicon in there that you get. But I think I would have stopped it too. The first one was good. The second one was good. The third, not so much. And then I hear he's working on a fourth.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm okay with that.
Beverly Hills Cop 3 is one of only three movies I've ever walked out on.
Yeah.
I very rarely walk out on a movie because I'm just like, well, I paid for it. I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm committed to it. But I felt that movie was so on autopilot that I just got like, why am I sitting here another hour of this? What am I bothering with? And I went up and left and did something. But when I rewatched Beverly Hills Cop, that movie was in 1984, Ghostbusters was the biggest hit comedy of all time. Mm. And then it was replaced by Beverly Hills Cop. And Ghostbusters had replaced Animal House as the biggest comedy of time. Okay. All of which featuring Saturday Night Live cast members.
Yes.
So you see that show just became such a factory of movie star talent. It's just, it's just unreal. But when I watched that movie again, I'm struck by that movie was originally a Sylvester Stallone thriller. Mm-hmm. And then he turned it down and they handed it to Eddie Murphy. And then they decided, okay, we're going to inject all this comedy in it. And I watch that movie sometimes and I go, there's no movie here without Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, that's true too.
This movie is just a boring cop movie. Eddie Murphy is, I mean, no offense to the other actors in the film.
Yeah.
But it's like, this is such a standard by the numbers cop movie. And I'm like, no wonder Eddie Murphy became a huge star, because he deserves to, because that movie made something like $400 million in 1985 money.
Yeah.
And it's like, he's 100% the reason that movie made that money.
Yeah, absolutely. He's the reason why you see it. And
yeah,
you're right. There are a bunch of, you know, characters that he kind of builds up. He's kind of the, you know, Michael Jordan of the movie. He kind of, you know, feeds the ball to everybody and then goes, okay, you can't make the shot, I'll make it.
Yeah, completely. I mean, it's just, they said, you watch that, I'm trying to think of what that movie would have been like with Sylvester Stallone. I would be like, this is just a zero movie.
Stop or my mom will shoot.
Or something. Oh my God. So he had three massive hits in a row. Now, there was another movie he did in between Trading Places and Beverly Hills Cop called Best Defense.
Yeah,
which is a horrible movie. And it was a movie. It was amazing how they, you know, God, how movies get made. They shot this whole movie with Dudley Moore. It's a comedy about war profiteering.
Yeah.
And they shoot this whole movie. They apparently get it back and they realize, this movie is just terrible. Yeah. Somebody gets the idea. What if we can crowbar Eddie Murphy into this movie by shooting entirely separate scenes that we're just going to stitch into the movie?
Yeah.
And apparently they offered Eddie Murphy some ungodly amount of money for like a week's work.
Yeah.
And he couldn't say no to it. And they crowbar him into this movie. And if you've ever seen the movie, it's terrible.
It's horrible.
Like, he doesn't even have any scenes with Dudley Moore. He's like beamed in from another movie. And another reason why I loved Eddie Murphy so much, 80s Eddie Murphy, was he came back around that time to host Saturday Night Live after he had left.
Yes.
And he came back and he basically was making jokes about how he was too big for Saturday Night Live. And he goes, I did this movie 48 hours. It was a giant hit. You know, giant applause. I did Trading Places. Giant applause. Then I did a really terrible movie called Best Defense. So now I'm back hosting Saturday Night Live. This is like, I love that. I just love that. Yeah. He's like, yeah, that movie I was in, that was shit. Sorry about that, everybody.
Yeah, sorry.
You didn't hear people talk like that in 1984.
Yeah, true.
Just didn't. And even in the opening credits to Raw, there's footage of people coming into his concert and they're asked by somebody off camera, what's your favorite Eddie Murphy movie? And you even get one guy go, I even liked Best Defense. Yeah. Good for you, Eddie. Like, good for you, willing to make fun of yourself.
No, one of his couple of scenes were funny.
He's funny in it, but the movie itself is just just absolutely dismal.
Yeah.
So right after Beverly Hills Cop, he went on to do a movie called The Golden Child. What do you think of The Golden Child? Have you seen it in a long time?
So The Golden Child is like a cult favorite. There's not many movies, Eddie Murphy movies, that I don't quote at least once a week.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my boyfriend and I can be in the kitchen cooking and he'll pass the knife or he'll go, hey, pass the knife. And I'm like, no, ask nicely.
I want the knife.
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it wasn't a really good movie, but he's very memorable in the movie.
I really like The Golden Child. I will go to bat for The Golden Child. I watched it a lot on cable. I will admit, I haven't seen it in a long time. Maybe it hasn't aged well. But I remembered liking Eddie Murphy in this kind of fantasy thriller thing. I really liked it. And it was not a huge hit, at least compared to Beverly Hills Cop. And then he went and did Beverly Hills Cop 2, which you can understand why he would do that. And then he did Coming to America and went on from there. Yeah. But I actually really like those first four outside of Best Defense. I actually really like those first four movies of him. And even though I think kind of like, I'm not even that big a fan of Coming to America, but to me, like all of his movies from say Another 48 Hours, which is a terrible movie.
Yeah.
To just before Dolomite. Although I admit I have not seen Dreamgirls. Supposedly he's very good in that. I haven't seen him.
Yeah, he's really, really good in Dreamgirls.
Is he? Okay.
Coming to America is one of those. Coming to America and Trading Places are two of those movies that I don't care what's going on. If I'm scrolling through a movie or a TV guide and I see that it's on, I'm going to stop everything I'm doing to watch.
Gotcha. Okay. What did you think of Coming to America, by the way?
I was not expecting, I had low expectations. So I was not expecting the original movie and I enjoyed it because I had very low expectations.
Okay.
And so it was a very, it was a cute family movie. You can tell that he was, you know, at that time rounding up to 60 years old and, you know, it just wasn't going to be the same comedy. And the original movie was original, you know, not many actors have played multiple characters in the movie at that point. And again, the original was one of those where, you know, we got pop culture lexicon. There you go. Mm-hmm. And from the movie. So there are things that, you know, we quote just about every week from this movie. and so the Coming to America, was kind of a cute little bow, and I can see where they'll probably try to do another, and it'll be one of those cute family movies.
I was frustrated with it because he doesn't get much anything funny to do.
Yeah.
And now that I talked about at the top of the show, now what I saw through Dolomite, which is a great movie, a terrific movie, and him on Comedians in Cars, like he still has it. He still has every ounce of his comedic skill. So I'm like, why would you put him in a movie where he's not given the chance to be funny? Now, maybe, you know, as you say, he's 60 now. He's got like, what, like 6 kids or something?
Yeah, 10 kids.
10 kids? 10 kids. 10. Oh, my God. 10
new kids. He and his new wife have 2 kids under the age of 4.
Wow. Oh, my Lord. Yeah. Wow. So maybe he's just kind of like, okay, I don't need to be the super funny guy. I can be the warm-hearted dad because that's where he is in life. And more power to him if that's what he wants to do. But it's just, when I saw him in that bit on with Seinfeld and just let it rip.
Yeah.
And he was so funny and looked like he wasn't even breaking a sweat.
Yeah.
It just makes me say, I really wish there were more people willing to make like more Dolomite movies because he's great in that movie. He's terrific. Yeah. And I'm like, somebody give him something really funny to do because he still has it. And that's amazing because he is just one of the great comedic talents of all time.
He is. Was it 2020 was a blur. I guess it was December 2019 when just at Christmas time and he did, he hosted SNL for the first time.
Right, first time, yeah.
Yeah. And he got an Emmy for that, rightfully so. He was hilarious in the show. And, you know, he brought back some of the old characters. But the character that just stole the show was he played an elf at the end of the show. Mm-hmm. And Santa, was it the reindeer or Santa? Somebody was losing it. I think it was the reindeer. They were losing it. They were coming down. They were attacking the elves. And he's like the eyewitness guy. There's a newscast. There's a news reporter there. And he's, you know, reporting from this catastrophe at the North Pole. And he's like, you know, they're asking his name. And he's like, don't worry about my name. And then it's something like Jingle Jangle or something. And it comes out. He's like, you know, but don't worry about my name. Yeah, that's my name, you know, and he's, you know, vintage Eddie. So I think it's there. And he actually, I saw an interview with Oprah Winfrey that he did not long ago. And he was talking about how he knew he wanted to do a sequel to Coming to America. He just wanted it to be just right. And I'm thinking that was just right. But I just think he's been on the couch, you know, being a father to probably 6 of the 10 kids. And because the older 4, you know, are out of the house. But he talks about how he had been, you know, kind of, quote, on the couch and being a father for the last so many years, you know. And so, yeah, I think that was for him to sign off on that. I think that was funny for him. Not that it wasn't funny, but it wasn't classic Eddie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, it's
coming. I think it's coming. Yeah.
I hope so. I mean, you mentioned his appearance on SNL, and he was very funny. He did Gumby again and all that stuff, which is really funny. One of the things that I noticed about how talented he was is that there was a sketch that he did back when he was on SNL originally. And because, of course, he used to do James Brown. He played James Brown. I mean, he had a million impressions.
Yes.
But he did James Brown. And they did this sketch called James Brown Celebrity Hot Tub Party.
Yes, yes.
And the whole sketch is that it's like a musical number where James Brown is hosting a talk show where he's going to be in a hot tub with a celebrity guest. But if you watch that sketch, the most amazing thing about it is there are no actual jokes in the sketch.
Yes.
It's just Eddie's impression.
Yes.
That's the whole sketch. They just, I'm like, that has how crazy talented he was.
Yeah.
That you could just say, let Eddie go out there, be James Brown, have the energy, do the hot tub, you know, and it'll be funny. And it is, but I'm like, the writers of this sketch didn't write any jokes. I'm like, that's how talented this guy was. You didn't even have to put jokes in the sketch.
Yeah. Yeah, that is probably one of my favorites of his.
Oh,
he's doing the call and response like James Brown. Hot tub, yeah.
It's just, but anybody, if you have not seen, anybody who's listening to this who doesn't remember or too young to remember Eddie Murphy doing SNL, there's a bunch of his clips on YouTube. Find that one and the energy level is so high.
Yeah.
You must have loved him in those little gold lamé trunks that he wore because he gets virtually naked in that sketch. So.
Yeah, again, I was at the age, I kind of bloomed late. And so I didn't know what all that was, like sex appeal and all that. Or it, you know, the quote, it, I didn't really know what it was, but whatever it was, he had it.
Oh, yeah. I've said that about when, on my other show, Superman Movie Minute, I remembered my dad taking me to see Superman, and I remembered how much I liked Valerie Perrine as Miss Tessmacher.
Yeah.
I didn't know why I liked her. I just know that I did. I'll figure this out later.
So, yeah, I can get that.
Yeah. So yeah, in 48 Hours, it's just a terrific movie. It's really fun. It's still very funny. It's just great to watch Eddie Murphy just be Eddie Murphy. And man, not to go out on a down note, but I did mention the sequel, Another 48 Hours, which is a dismal movie. It's clearly kind of just a paycheck for everybody.
Yeah.
Brian James as Keogh is in it, and they really do his character dirty in that movie. It's very, very unfortunate. And the thing that frustrates me is I wish – because him and Eddie Murphy and Nick Nolte had really great chemistry.
Yes.
I wish they had just put them in another movie together.
Exactly.
Like not make it another 48 hours, just make another movie.
The funniest scene in Another 48 Hours is when he gets out of jail and he's trying to find some place to stay. And he calls an old friend that he probably, you know, was hustling with, you know, whatever it is, some street guy. And he calls and his wife answers the phone, or he answers the phone, and he talks about the guy's wife. And he goes, oh, you married her. Okay. And then he goes, apparently the guy tells him that he's, you know, a newfound Christian. He goes, oh, I love Jesus. I love Jesus. I love Jesus. And the guy hangs up on him. And that was the funniest part of the movie.
Yeah, I think about like when they did Pretty Woman with Richard Gere and Julia Roberts, and they wanted to get them back, you know, that chemistry. And they just did a different movie.
Yeah.
And in the old days in Hollywood, that's what they used to do. They would just pair, you know, Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn in different movies. They didn't make sequels.
Right.
So, you know, I'm like, just put Eddie Murphy and Nick Nolte in another movie together. Don't make it 48 hours because it doesn't need to be. But, you know, alas, bad sequels don't make this movie any lesser. You know, it's still a really funny movie, still highly entertaining, and it's available anywhere. So, yeah. Like I said, it gives me hope that Eddie Murphy still has some really funny movies left in him, because he's still got the talent. That's for damn sure.
Well, he wants to go back to stand up, and you know, the moment he announces my savings account is getting drank.
I guess you got 10 kids and you live in that giant house.
Yeah, you gotta. Well, you know, going back to what did you say? Trading Places grossed.
Oh, but Beverly Hills Cop made
Beverly Hills Cop
$400 million. Yeah.
Yeah, going back to that in 1984.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
I think he invested.
I hope so. I hope so. He's got Shrek money. I'm sure he's doing it.
And, right. You know, he'll forever be donkey to a generation.
Exactly. So, well, Erica, I mean, thank you so much for coming on to talk 48 hours with me. I've been, ever since I knew you got into the world of podcasting, I wanted to do a show with you. And I mean, this is just marvelous. We used to work together at CBS, and now we don't. And so I'm so glad that we had a chance to reconnect and do the show together. And I've really been enjoying your show. So why don't you tell people where they can find you out on the internet?
Well, since you mentioned my shows, I have one podcast called Pray, Love, Grow, and it's a journey to kind of becoming your best self. It's kind of my Oprah vibe. And then I have another show called Hey Y'all Hey Podcast, and we talk about current events. And, you know, some of the weird things, like, you know, the fact that the Department of Justice is now saying they've been seeing unidentified objects, but they don't want to call them UFOs. So we talk about stuff like that. Or, you know, there's this big thing about Monique, in the comedian Monique in the news lately. And she's talking about, you know, young women who wear hair bonnets and you know, or, you know, scarves or whatever, and slippers at the airport, like, present yourself, you know, really all the things going on in the world. You want to talk about people wearing sleepwear on the plane. Okay. Sure, fight your battles. So, so there's Pray, Love, Grow, and Hey Y'all Hey. And then on Facebook, I am Erica Nicole Anderson. And on Instagram, I am Pray, Love, Grow Podcast, and also Hey Y'all Hey Podcast. It's very original.
Excellent, excellent. I'm glad you're enjoying the world of podcasting.
Yes, and I want to thank you for being such an inspiration. I am very honored. I listen to your podcast religiously, and you know, it's always good when you can find your people and you find like-minded nerds. And I love all things movies, and so I'm just honored that you even considered me to be on your show.
Oh, not at all. This was a total blast, and I can't wait to do this again with you. Like I said,
yes, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. We really never got a chance to talk that much at work. Yeah. You know, we really didn't. So it's nice. This is like the longest conversation we've had together. This is just yeah. Marvelous. So yes. So thank you so much, Erica. So thank of course you. Everybody, you want to find back episodes of the show, go to our website, findwaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon Music. We're always talking movies over on Twitter at Film and Water Pod. I have other movie podcasts, because of course I do. You can listen to those at the same place, the Fire and Water Podcast Network. There's Fade Out, there's Superman Movie Minute, and Citizen Kane Minute, all running simultaneously. It's all too much. And if you want to support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, go to patreon.com/FW Podcast. There you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So big thanks to my pal Corey Musa for his support of the Film and Water Podcast. So that is going to do it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will see you later. But until then, that's a wrap.
Well, look, Hoss, you start running a respectable business, and I won't have to come in here and hassle you every night. You know what I mean? And I want the rest of you cowboys to know something. There's a new sheriff in town. And his name is Reggie Hammond. Y'all be cool. Right on.